And a very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, very happy to be with you on this Monday afternoon. And along with me, of course, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Bob, how are you doing this afternoon?
Not bad. Recovering from the election, but not sure I've figured it out yet.
I was going to say,
our guest may help us.
Fully recovered from the election? Because I'm certainly not. And that, of course, is the reason we're here today, is to hopefully put the election to bed. I know there's been a lot of analysis already. We'll try to add our voices into the statewide and local mix here. And, of course, we do want to hear from you. Give us a call and add your voice to the conversation. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free, of course, at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters at nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. A few of the usual suspects in studio with us for this hour, Mike Wolf and Tom Hay from IPFW here in Fort Wayne. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for being with us today.
Sure.
My pleasure. Thanks, Sean.
I know we just said we were going to add our voices to the statewide races, but I do want to touch briefly on that race at the top of the ballot between President Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. Of course, Barack Obama ended up winning in a much, wider margin than many folks thought. Tom Hay, your thoughts on how that election ended up shaking out?
Well, it was a little wider in the Electoral College than some forecasts, although pretty close to the ones that we talked about in the weeks coming or the weeks prior. So it wasn't a huge surprise in any way. It was still pretty close nationwide. There were some interesting storylines, I think. Maybe we can get into those a little bit, of what might have caused the race to tip one way or the other. But it does, it's a convincing victory for Obama.
Mike Wolf, a convincing victory, is it a mandate? I think that's the debate, that's the thing that a lot of people are trying to figure out right now.
Yeah, that's always the question. And as the president says, you know, I ran on these issues. It was pretty clear. This was I think a lot of people said these were some really good debates overall, especially the second and third one. And that his argument is that means people know, and so therefore I'm going to govern the way I said. Now, clearly, there's different messages than when you draw the congressional elections, although the trend did go in that way. So all presidents like to claim a mandate, but where the rubber meets the road is really hard to see. It's going to hinge on a lot of issues, I think.
Mm-hmm. Bob Kaler.
Something that I wonder is, rather than a broad mandate like the kind that George Bush claimed after his 2004 victory that didn't pan out to be as efficacious as he'd expected, I'm thinking this may shake out as something where both parties are agreeing on certain issues, that the time to iron something out has come. Does that make sense to you, more than a broad mandate?
Yeah, I think that we left a lot of things hanging until this election. There was a lot of legislative business and long-term problems that were purposely and knowingly by the American public and by the leaders in Washington pushed to the end of this election. And that adds to the sense that these issues need to be addressed and with the results of this election. And it is different. I think it's a great point you bring up. It's different. George W. Bush used his mandate to push Social Security reform, which was a big uphill push. These are issues that need to be addressed. I mean, the sequestration and everything has long-term implications and long-term public policy involved in that as well. So it's kind of a natural mandate in that sense.
And that's a good example that you bring up, because I'm thinking it was the day after the election, Speaker Boehner signaled what I took to be a considerably softer position, where he said that revenue increases that came from closing down loopholes could be a part of the deal. And my impression was that Republicans had been pretty dead set against even any increase in revenue that didn't come from economic growth. Was that your recollection of how things were?
Yeah, and Mike's right. They don't have a chance to hit the reset button like they did after George W. Bush was reelected. They have to deal with this stuff, and the markets have already started, even before the election, to react to the uncertainty of how they're going to resolve this fiscal cliff situation. Because with what happened with the debt ceiling previously, the reassuring message from some people, don't worry, we'll get something, isn't going to convince 100% of people that they're going to. So they're already getting pressure from people to start sending out signals that we are going to get something that prevents the automatic budget cuts and tax increases that come from the sequester. And yeah, they were waiting for this election to see who was going to have the stronger hand to play. The Democrats have a slightly stronger hand. I think the Republicans are trying to indicate to their base that we're going to have to play the hand that we're dealt here. And that means we can't say we get everything we want or we walk away from the table. That's just not an option right now.
Well, in fact, some folks in conservative media, conservative commentators like Bill Kristol are even saying nationally now that maybe it's time to really look toward a compromise. I mean, is this a movement of some folks toward the center? I mean, are we moving toward an era of compromise with this new Congress and with the reelected president? Mike Wolff, we can start with you.
We'll see. I mean, this is a party that has only gotten more votes than the Democrats once since 1988. And I think a lot of people are looking at that and taking it very seriously and looking at which direction to head. And they had, we talked about George W. Bush. In many ways, he was a perfect candidate for the Republican Party of the time. He was able to reach out to the different wings of the party, the pinstripes in Wall Street, and as well as the evangelicals, and really bring those together that no one else has been able to do. Clearly, McCain and Romney haven't been able to do it. And they've struggled in primaries against people that were on the other side. So I do think that there's a look to say, where are we going to plant our flag now as a party? And that will lead in some clear directions. You've heard people talk about both on this issue, taxation, and as well as immigration and other things that really have a natural place. And the luck that I think we have before this new Congress comes is actually in this session that's ending, is there are a lot of people that are leaving. And they can maybe take some darts on their way out and really do some heavy lifting. Senator Lugar, I know La Tourette in Ohio in the House has talked about legislating out some of the Simpson bulls. And that can, you know, we'll see, that can lead to some traction on some big policy issues that maybe the next Congress can pick up on then.
We have to go to a break in just a few minutes here, but I'd like to ask you both, Tom Hay, we'll start with you. What to your mind is the most extraordinary narrative coming out of last Tuesday now? Because there, as you mentioned, there are an awful lot. What are the one or two that you would pick up on as we close out this Congress and move into the next one?
I'll give you two. One was how badly Romney's comments in the primaries hurt him with Latino voters. I was looking at some of the exit polls and looking at different groups and demographics, and nearly all of them moved a little bit towards Romney, right? Because it's a closer election than it was. Well, Romney versus McCain from 2008 to 2012, mm-hmm. Except Latino voters and Asian voters slightly. But the Latino voters moved strongly in the favor of Democrats. And I was watching the election returns with a Mexican-American friend of mine. He said, in the Spanish-language media, the self-deportation stuff just got them hammered. And this is a voting block that that the Republican Party can't have those kind of numbers from. The other one is people making under $50,000, working class voters, especially in Ohio. I think a story that really hurt Romney was the claim they made in the last couple of weeks that the Chrysler Corporation was moving jobs to China, and you had in the local media in Ohio the Chrysler executive saying that's not what is happening. We are now going to sell some cars in that market. It's not a zero sum moving jobs from America. And I think when you get that in the local media, people have a different response to things in their local media versus the national media. And the fact that he was getting really called out in Ohio's media, I think that hurt Romney in Ohio.
Mike Wolff, your big narratives coming out of this election on the national scene.
One is kind of a rearview look of what a waste the last 2 years were in Congress. I mean, it really, when you talk about things like the debt ceiling, and I know that people had reasonable positions on either side and were trying to push forward policy. But in the end, a super committee put together and this game of chicken with sequestration over the ideological thing, no budget getting passed, that the politics of that time you really hope are over. Now, we don't know if that's the case. Obviously, we're going to see. And the next lesson learned, we have a midterm election coming up, which probably will go to the Republicans, as it naturally does, is the lesson that the party is thinking about right now going to be offset then by the sequence of elections? Or is this... is this really a time that we can see some productive work done and both parties get together?
And you're referring there to the kind of conventional wisdom, I guess, that midterm elections typically go against the party in the presidency?
Yes, especially the sixth year. And mm-hmm. what you have is members of the president's party decide not to run that maybe would be the stronger candidates. And certainly the varsity team for the Republicans will step up to run, knowing this the way the cycle runs, and so you have a kind of a redoubling of the effect there. And so it depends on who they recruit. If they leave people like they have the last couple cycles and lose the Senate, they should have had a very clear majority in the U.S. Senate by now. Obviously the wrong lesson learned.
And then another thing with that, the Obama campaigns demonstrated that they have this tremendous turnout operation, but that's been for the last two presidential campaigns. There's been no evidence that the Democrats can ignite that in these off-year elections. And so we're starting to see a situation where Democrats do pretty well every 4 years, and then in the intervening years, the Republicans have their voters turning out better.
We're going to take a quick break here. We'll continue the discussion, and we'll come back to the state of Indiana and look at races both on the statewide level and some more local races as well. We do want to hear from you today. Give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free, of course, 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @middaymatters. Stay with us. The conversation goes on when we come back.
What's it like for parents who have a child who is profoundly different or likely to be stigmatized? A child who's born with Down syndrome, autism, or dwarfism, or a child who's transgendered or conceived in rape? We talk with Andrew Solomon about his new book, Far From the Tree, Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity. Join us.
Fresh air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Do you have a guitar hero? This week on American Roots, it's all about the guitar, with players like Jerry Garcia, Bo Diddley, Les Paul, and Memphis Minnie. Plus conversation with country thumb picker Ben Hall and jazz modernist Pat Martino. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne in fall 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum at www.indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Lutheran Hospital, providing procedures for heart failure patients that keep their treatment in Fort Wayne close to home. Information at LutheranHealth.net.
And this is Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler and Tom Hay and Mike Wolf from IPFW. We're putting the election to bed in this hour of Midday Matters, and we want to hear from you. What were the best stories, the best narratives that came out of last Tuesday's election? Give us a call. Share your thoughts. 260-452-1185. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. We're at Midday Matters. Of course, gentlemen, there were other elections, believe it or not, besides the battle between President Obama and Governor Romney, including at a lot of offices open at the statewide level. The governor's race in particular, Representative now Governor-elect Mike Pence winning over Democrat John Gregg. And Mike Wolf, let's start with you. This is not really an unexpected result. I think even back when Mr. Pence announced that he was going to run for this office, a lot of folks thought that he was going to be the guy. And John Gregg did close the gap, at least in the polls, a little bit, and in the end result, but it still wasn't enough to overcome Mike Pence, who's a very polished candidate.
Absolutely, and he's a national figure, easily able to raise money, and well known throughout the state. So he began with a real advantage, and so it was going to take a lot for Gregg to overcome it. And I think Democrats, as we've been saying, Democrats in the state of Indiana have to ask maybe some of the same questions that we were talking about the Republican Party asking. Where's the developmental, at least younger Democrats coming up who will run statewide soon? And hasn't seemed that they have situated the best candidacies. And clearly maybe Pence chased some people out. And I do think, if you watch the debates, that Gregg did very well at getting after him. But that doesn't mean necessarily that was the showdown you would have expected. Mm-hmm. You know,
Tom Hay, I know that before, I think it was maybe a few months or a month or so before the election itself, there was a poll that came out that showed a large, wide, double-digit margin between Mr. Pence and Mr. Gregg. Ultimately, though, I mean, Mike Pence, he had his game together from the start. And I think when Andy Downs was here last, in fact, we talked about how Gregg just didn't get going fast enough.
The governor's race took on something of a self-fulfilling prophecy character that everybody thought Pence was going to win, and so they behaved that way. And you could throw the outside money in as well. Now, all of this money that was raised, a lot of it went into national politics one way or another, the presidential race or attempts to affect the Senate races. But if you compare how much money was spent on the Senate race here in Indiana from third-party groups and wonder, well, 4% isn't necessarily that much to have made up if there would have been more resources available. The fact that it ended up close does give you some, or closer than people thought, does give you some reason to wonder what could have been different. But given the success of the Republican Party in other races throughout the state, it shows that the Republican Party is back to being very much the dominant party in Indiana politics.
Well, and in fact, largely down the line, it was not a GOP sweep exactly, but a very strong showing for the Republicans in the state of Indiana. Bob Kaler,
why do you guys think Romney did so much better in Indiana, getting it as a percentage of vote than Mike Pence did?
Well, I think you know, there was absolutely no effort by the Obama campaign. So there's not a two-sided, you know, the status quo, the normal vote, as we say, the partisan breakdown was on his side. He never had a chance to shake off the negative reaction that a lot of studies say that in the midterm, 2010 midterm, likely cost Obama 5% of the vote just from Affordable Care Act. So I think, the Hoosiers did not respond well to that piece of legislation. It came up in the Senate race, you know, and so I think when you have a two-sided argument, however, as you did in the gubernatorial election, with debates, with sharp, I thought the debates were really good, that you can kind of reinvigorate your partisans.
It looks like we have a caller on the line here, and of course we want you to join the conversation today. If you have a question or comment for our panelists, the number is 260-452-1185, or you can call us toll-free, of course, 1-800-471-9264. Looks like we've got Fred on line one. Fred, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Greetings. I have a question first and then sort of a comment question. The first question is, do we now have a boycott-proof majority in the House, Republicans?
Are you talking about in the Indiana House?
Indiana House, yes.
I believe, now, gentlemen, there are super majorities in both houses. Is that right?
Yeah.
Mike Wolf.
Yeah.
It looks we're getting nods across the studio here,
okay.
Fred.
The second question is, you know, there was a it was purported to be, appeared to be a Greg advertisement that gave an extensive sort of nasty comment portrayal of the Tea Party Association of Mike Pence and linked with Tea Party Association with Murdoch. And that occurred like 3 weeks before the election. And it's my feeling, and I guess this is the question, is that linkage of Pence with the Tea Party seemed to be, you know, a real strong influence on the narrowing of Pence's lead over Greg. And also, especially in the context of 2010, Pence was a major factor in a lot of meetings in Washington for the Tea Party. That sort of disappeared after February of 2011 when he basically declared candidacy. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if the analysts see that. I believe that the Tea Party linkage could have helped narrow and perhaps even defeat Pence.
And let's put that to the panel. I mean, gentlemen, this wasn't exactly nationwide anyway, this wasn't exactly a repudiation of the Tea Party, but the Tea Party brand didn't seem to carry as much power with it. In some cases, voters seem to be rejecting that philosophy. I mean, let's go to you, Tom Hay. Where does this stand in terms of, you know, comparing that national feeling to the Pence campaign?
I think the caller's right. I think it did have an effect on it. I think it probably did contribute to some of the narrowing that Richard Murdoch had pushed the extremism button, I guess, in Indiana. He was used in ads across the country. I mean, his statements were, one of the most quoted lines in this campaign and across the country. And so I think there's no doubt that the attempt to tie Pence and Murdoch together could have affected Pence's numbers. And it's while Mike Pence ran a really positive campaign, this is one of the things you can do when you're running double-digit leads, is you can be a little less critical of your opponent. Although he was willing to go after him in debates, but his advertising
he largely stayed out of the mud, and for much of the campaign didn't even address the things that Greg was saying about him.
Yeah. However. Mike Pence is not a moderate. His national reputation is not that. So when the Tea Party could be raised as a negative issue, it was something that could stick to Mike Pence because it was not unreasonable to ask questions about those kind of issues those kind of candidates, and now we've seen in the last couple of elections that this Tea Party brand can become a negative for candidates.
Mike Wolff, I'll put a similar question to you. Is certainly the Tea Party is here to stay, at least in terms of a lot of people are still behind it, a lot of money is still behind it. Is the brand damaged goods at the moment, though?
It's hard to judge that just yet, because while we can look at it and see some big losses, particularly the Senate race, at the same time it offered the Republican Party at the time a great ability to put the Bush unpopular end of the Bush era behind them. And what we see when we've done national surveys and surveys in the state of Indiana with the Down Center, we found that much of the Tea Party was not an organic movement itself. There were some, to be sure, but much of it was Republican activists who were very engaged in issues and very policy-oriented. So these are they were able to kind of hit the reset button and move forward and be in opposition to President Obama. And so it had a lot of value for the party. We'll have to see whether or not there's damage there. Is Richard Murdoch going to become a household name that's connected to this? They didn't start with him, though. We saw Sharon Angle lose in Nevada, a seat they should have won. And so I don't, we'll have to see what happens in this midterm coming up to see whether the candidate recruitment that they've done, which was pretty impressive to have people want to run as a Tea Party candidate and win against someone like Richard Lugar, then it's hard to say that it's passed or necessarily damaged completely.
Well, I want to get to the Senate race in just a moment here, but I do want to take a minute to kind of compare the governor and the governor-elect. Mike Pence and Governor Daniels are very different people, even if they're of the same party. Where do you think one is stronger than the other, or different from the other in terms of their agendas for at least the next few years? Tom Hay, could you do a little comparison between Mitch Daniels and Mike Pence?
Mitch Daniels is more of a numbers guy, or at least that is his reputation, and so he came in with a lot of ideas of how to reform the state budget, ideas of how to raise revenue without raising taxes. Mike Pence is more of a social issues guy, and with the Republican supermajorities, he may be more willing to engage in some controversial social issues and try to get legislation going on that than either Mitch Daniels was generally willing to do. I mean, Mitch Daniels got dragged into the Planned Parenthood controversy kicking and screaming, you could say, and it did not seem to be something that he was real thrilled ban the funding for Planned Parenthood. And a lot of people speculated it was his presidential ambitions, or who knows. But Mike Pence is not likely to have that kind of reticence to get involved in some of those red meat social issues.
And Mike Wolff, of course, Mitch Daniels, the governor who famously tried to put the ceasefire on social issues in favor of budgetary issues, other financial matters. Do you expect to see a turn away from those, especially since there's a supermajority in both chambers in the state house now?
Well, one of the questions is how much is left to do on the agenda. I mean, part of what will hamper or keep the new governor-elect within boundaries is the fact that much of the agenda has already been done. So what's new to bring up that wasn't already succeeded? And so I do think we will see. There isn't at the political elite level, there's not opposition institutionally because of the supermajorities. But Fred's point, the caller's point about the outside or other people's willingness to kind of challenge Mike Pence in a way, because he was the first, the highest elected official in Washington to officially be part of the Tea Party caucus. So he is a different governor, and we'll see if that actually it's hard to imagine mobilizing people when you had state legislatures leaving the state, but it would be interesting to see what the political reaction will be here in the next couple of years.
We need to take a break for the news in just a moment. We do have a caller on the line, though. I'd like to get to Diane. Diane, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, I've been walking in and out of the room, so I'm not sure if you might have addressed this already, but you had mentioned that Pence got a lot of outside money for his campaign. Do you know where that came from, or is it one of those hidden bundled groups of money that came into the state from outside?
A very good question, Diane. Thank you. And gentlemen, this was very much a race at the gubernatorial level, superintendent level, and of course in the Senate campaign a lot of large war chests already, but also a lot of outside money coming in as well.
Sure. I don't know if I can give you a breakdown of what specific groups gave to Pence or to the other candidates. But it was a lot of the same money that was going into everywhere. You had money sort of freed up by the Citizens United legislation. And it wasn't...
I'm sorry, Diane, we missed what you said there.
Like from the Adelsons or the Koch brothers?
Of course, the Koch brothers and Adelson, the big names in Super PAC donations.
They gave some money to the super PACs. They were more known for things they gave to the Republican primary candidates' own super PACs. But I do think that they also spent some money on some of the groups like Crossroads and so forth. But one of the stories of the election is that those groups were pretty ineffective. Either they were ineffective or they canceled each other out, because the numbers were pretty consistent from the summer. And there's real questions being asked of whether the strategies that some of those groups pursued in terms of mostly television advertising are as effective as trying to invest in a ground game, for instance. There's
in the Pence campaign specifically?
Well, I don't think that as much money from the outside in the same way came in for the Pence campaign as the Murdoch campaign. That was clearly where we saw both in the primary and the general election a significant amount of money coming from numerous different groups. And part of that is because it was federal legislation that was changed. And so the Senate races did have a different complexion based on that, whereas the Indiana state legislation dealing with campaign finance is actually quite looser than any of the federal ones. Corporate giving has been legal, the limitations are entirely different and oftentimes much less than federal candidates face. So the real innovation, I guess, was more evident, I think, in the Murdoch race than it was in the Pence race. And the other thing, though, is that that Pence we would have seen him really hustling and raising a lot more money had this race been closer earlier. It was probably his closest point at the end, but if it had shown this amount of closeness early, he would have been very flush with cash and probably had a lot more outside support.
Okay, thank you very much.
Diane, we appreciate your call. Have a good day. And, of course, we encourage more listeners to get in touch with us this hour, 260-452-1185, or you can always call 1-800-471-9264. We do have to take a quick break for the news. We'll continue the discussion when we come back. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
An Israeli musician told her friends she wanted to record an album in Persian. They said, "Oh my God, you're going to sing a whole record in a language of Ahmadinejad?" Rita Jahan Firouz's songs became hits in Israel and made her an underground star in Iran, singing in a taboo tongue, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah DeLeo with WBOY News. Authorities in Fort Wayne say a volunteer firefighter was killed after he lost control of a tanker truck and it flipped over. Police Sergeant Mark Brooks says the Washington Township Fire Department truck was on its way to a brush fire Sunday night when it crashed while turning at an intersection on the city's northwest side. Brooks says that the firefighter was the only person inside the tanker when it crashed. The firefighter's identity was not immediately released. Brooks says it appears water in the tanker shifted as it was turning, causing it to go out of control. The truck hit three utility poles and stopped on its side about 100 yards from the intersection. Two people are dead and dozens are displaced as investigators continue to seek the cause of an explosion that leveled at least two houses in an Indianapolis neighborhood and damaged as many as 30 beyond repair. Indianapolis fire officials say they don't know yet what caused the blast around 11 p.m. Saturday. Citizens Energy says crews haven't found any signs of a gas leak. Officials have not released the identities of the two people who were killed. However, a candlelight vigil was held Sunday night at Southwest Elementary School in nearby Greenwood for second grade teacher Jennifer Longworth. She and her husband, John Dion Longworth, lived in one of the homes destroyed in the blast. WTHR-TV reported that friends, family, and colleagues of the teacher gathered at the school. Following the retirement of its two longtime leaders, the House Ways and Means Committee will look significantly different when the Indiana General Assembly begins its session in January. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports on the committee that guards the purse strings of state government.
Between them, Uniondale Republican Jeff Espick and Indianapolis Democrat Bill Crawford had 80 years of legislative experience. The two men led the House Ways and Means Committee when their party was in control, but both are retiring this year. House Speaker Brian Bosma will announce the new Republican Ways and Means leadership team this week, and he says there are 8 or 9 candidates for the chairmanship. Bosma says there are a variety of qualifications he's considering.
You have to have time to do it because it is a time-consuming process. They have to be someone that can take in a lot of information in a short period of time. They have to be experienced in the legislative process.
House Democratic leader Scott Pilath says he's tabbed Indianapolis Representative Greg Porter to lead his caucus on Ways and Means.
He's an extraordinarily experienced legislator. He has great integrity. He's a good man, and he has a great grasp of a myriad of issues, but particularly in the education realm.
Indiana devotes 56% of its state budget to education, the highest percentage of any state in the country. Porter formerly led Democrats on the House Education Committee. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
A home and away weekend for the Fort Wayne Comets, WBOY's Doug Gruber has the results.
Friday night, the Evansville Icemen visited the Coliseum and used a power play goal to take a 1-0 lead after one period. In period two, the Comets came alive and dominated play, putting 16 shots on goal, getting scores from Daniel Nicolette and Brandon Marino for a 2-1 lead after two. Marino's goal came on a putback after Daniel Nicolette's shot bounced off the goalpost. Three more goals in the third period, including Colin Chalk's first of the season, and the K's skated away with a 5-2 win. Saturday night in Kalamazoo, the Comets never led, with the Wings taking a 2-1 lead after one period. 5-2 after two, finished with a 6-2 win over the Comets. The Wings' win put them just 1 point behind the Comets for second place, and the K's just a point behind first-place Cincinnati in the North Division. Two games on home ice this coming weekend. Friday night, Toledo makes its first visit to Fort Wayne since 1986. Saturday night, Evansville visits. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
You're listening to 89.1 FM WBOI. And now back to your host for Midday Matters, Sean Beter.
It's a quarter till 1 o'clock, and this is Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler, Tom Hay, and Mike Wolf, and we're doing some election recap and looking ahead to what's next. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 260-452-1185, or you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. We have a few callers on the line. Let's open up the phones and go to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon, and thank you. I was just wondering, in light of the discussion before the break, about the more social issues agenda that Mike Pence might have in his Tea Party affiliation, and the Planned Parenthood legislation that was overturned with a more extremely conservative body of legislators. Are we maybe likely to see more laws that are passed that will only be struck down later?
A very good question. And Tom Hay, we'll start with you. What do you think?
It's certainly possible. It's certainly possible that you could have something on reproductive rights. It's certainly possible that you could have something with regard to marriage. Although, as Mike said, a lot of those things are already done. So I'm not sure exactly where they'll start. But it's certainly the case that it could end up being a litigious. There could be litigious consequences, and states are slowly pushing the boundaries of the Roe v. Wade decision, and we could be one state that would pass something that would end up having to be adjudicated by the courts for sure.
Mike Wolf, is that do you share those thoughts?
Yeah, I think there'll try to be an effort to legislate around the Planned Parenthood decision that she was talking about in the courts to see how it can go forward. There's not a whole lot of room because a lot of this is dealing with federal grants that go to Planned Parenthood that would be turning away federal money, which I think some would be for. But at the same time, this one's complex to find a fix to if the fix is to try and re-legislate the Planned Parenthood a ban. So we'll see. I'm sure there's a lot of agenda out there, but as mentioned, some of it's been eaten up already.
And we should mention too, of course, we're discussing this in a time where the economy is still really issue number one, and people still need jobs, and we still are digging out of this very, very large hole, both in Indiana and nationwide. So Elizabeth, we appreciate your call. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you'd like to get in on the conversation. We have another caller on the line. Let's go to David. David, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hello. I'd like to hear your guests' thoughts on Indiana state house races locally, particularly the relative ease with which Bob Morris was reelected despite his inflammatory email regarding the Girl Scouts that created national embarrassment, in my opinion, as well as the loss of a very strong consumer advocate and champion of and voice for urban Fort Wayne in the defeat of Wynn Moses as the direct result, in my opinion, of Republican gerrymandering of his district. And I'll take your comments off the air.
All right.
Thank you very much.
David, that was a great segue into one of the many points on our agenda today. Thank you very much for the call. Gentlemen, let's start with Bob Morris, as David suggested. One, Mike Wolf quite handily in his district, despite two other challengers. That is, I believe, is a very Republican-leaning district.
Yeah, it's, both of these stories are the story of the partisan complexion of the district. And that they were running in, and the other noteworthy component of the Bob Morris effort is that his presence, the ground game that he puts out, is pretty impressive. So he has signs everywhere, clearly, which are important, but they drown out your opponent when you do that, clearly. But also, it goes beyond that. Signs are signs, but he has. When I went to vote, he had two people standing outside dancing around in Bob Morris t-shirts. I have a friend of mine who played on a softball team sponsored by Bob Morris. He gets his name out, and it's a consistent name. And certainly the controversy he came up with led to a hiccup there where the issue is, how can you turn around when a lot of that district probably agrees with the position at some level? At least some do.
Tom, hey, I want to put David's second point to you. One of the probably bigger surprises this past election night was the defeat of Wynn Moses, who has been in that seat for a very long time. And as David indicated, his district is very different now than it has been in previous elections.
Yeah, the outcome is totally dependent on how that district was drawn. And for anybody who's met Wynn Moses, I don't know if there's anybody who enjoys being a politician, you know, in a good way more than Wynn Moses does. I mean, he's somebody who's just sort of constitutionally suited to that job. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with himself after this. But it gives you a sense of just how consequential the Republican victory was in 2010 for this being a redistricting year, and the fact that they had a very unexpected strong victory. It had a huge impact on these House races in terms of all of the people who were returned to the House of Representatives in the U.S. Senate, but also all of the state places, all the state redistricting. And so the power to do that redistricting is an extremely important one in politics.
Go ahead, Mike Wall.
I was just going to say, and the contention that those two legislative sessions had probably did not lead them away from redrawing it very sharply against a senior Democrat like that as well.
I want to get to U.S. House races in just a moment here, but we do have a question that leads us into another one of our points from Kevin. Kevin says, with Glenda Ritz beating Tony Bennett for the Secretary of Education, Superintendent of Public Instruction job, I should say, does that give any grassroots support for changes to the education policies Bennett put in place? It seems both Pence and Daniels dismissed her election as saying it will not impact the changes that were being pursued by the previous administration. This was another one of the big shocks, but perhaps the biggest shock statewide in terms of Glenda Ritz, the Democrat, beating incumbent Tony Bennett, who appeared anyway, Tom Hay, to have a lot of support around the state of Indiana, and of course a heck of a lot more money than Glenda Ritz did as well.
Yeah, I think the last poll that I saw that came out had him up 3 or 4 percentage points. So this was one where the polls got it wrong too. It was a genuine surprise, and it has to be conveyed as a mandate for her in that sense. I mean, for her to win in that environment shows that there were people really rejecting what Tony Bennett was doing. A lot of people who were voting for Mitt Romney and voting for Mike Pence, voting for her, but it does not sound like Ritz and Pence are off on a good start with each other, and that's definitely something to keep an eye on in Indiana politics is whether that is going to be a source of friction for the foreseeable future.
And Mike Wolf, certainly Glenda Ritz has her work cut out for her. I mean, Indiana has been on the forefront of a lot of these education changes, and with a Republican governor staying in that seat, along with supermajorities in both chambers in the state house, it does seem like, I've heard the term lame duck thrown around already. Do you think that'll be the case the next 4 years?
Well, we'll see. I mean, this is a position that's not common in every state. You know, a lot of this stuff is handled not a separately elected position. In fact, the governor mentioned in the past that he doesn't understand why it's separately elected, why it should be under the governor's office. And I wonder whether we'll see maybe a legislative move in that direction to change the office and change the constitutional structure that provides it. But she does have a lot of work cut out. Her victory means a lot, I think, for the reasons Tom mentioned, and because it demonstrates that it's a real constituency out there that was motivated on a pretty far down part of the ballot to get out and vote a particular way. They were attentive to the issues, and there was clearly unhappiness. But the state legislature ends up writing the legislation. She executes, so we'll see whether or not how much she can control that.
And just very briefly, 2 weeks ago, we outlined the race between Joe Donnelly and Richard Murdoch. We've touched on it a little bit already. Is Mr. Donnelly's win a big surprise to either of you guys, given the elements that were in place, largely, you know, outside money, but also Mr. Murdoch's misstep in that Senate debate that we heard so much about? Tom Hay.
Well, in terms of the last poll that came out, no, it's not a surprise. But in the overall picture, yeah, it is, because this was a tremendous own goal, as it were, for the Republican Party, of losing a race that they really should have won. And you have to look at this and say, I know, I think I was reading Mark Souder at the Howie Politics blog, was angry at the way that the mainstream media pushed this narrative of Murdoch being an extremist. But to use another sports metaphor, if you have the other team's playbook and you still lose, you can't blame the refs. You know, I mean, you know that this is what's going to happen because of the Sharon Angle race in Nevada, because of the O'Donnell race in Delaware. And so for Richard Murdoch to have known that this was what he had to do with his campaign, that he had to protect himself from seeming too extreme, and he had to do something about making peace with the Lugar camp, and didn't do either of those things, that's one of those ones where you can't say it was predetermined. This is a guy who actually lost a race. This was a campaign that failed.
Mike Wolf, do you agree? I mean, this was one of those seats that was for decades a very safe Republican seat, and suddenly now it's in the Democrats' column.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of Republicans saying, you know, we just lost Richard Lugar's seat, and that's the big story. As much as the debate issue popped up, it was that he never had a cushion. He had never built a cushion by getting the Lugar Republicans back, but the nature of a divisive primary brings that. Maybe the response by Richard Lugar the day after, and as well as maybe Mr. Murdoch's inability to kind of make a little more peace here, left this where a mistake could be fatal instead of just small.
Very briefly, we've only got about a minute left. Looking at our delegation to the U.S. Senate and to the U.S. House, not a lot of surprises in the most recent election on the House side. But the thing that strikes me is we in Indiana are missing a lot of seniority in terms of how long our folks have been in their roles versus folks from other states. Has Indiana lost a lot of influence, a lot of power in the last few years by turning over so many sitting representatives and sitting senators, including this most recent race, turning over Lugar's seat to Mike Wolf? We'll take the last word from you.
Yeah, we do lose something. Seniority isn't what it used to be. Party matters more relatively than it has in the past in seniority, but you do lose a lot. You lose the chairmanship of committees and the ability to hire staff and all this kind of thing to drive policy. So you do lose something. Now, Donnelly is perfectly positioned to be kind of the pivotal voter in the U.S. Senate, though, ideologically. So
We'll have to leave the discussion there. But Mike Wolf, Tom Hay from IPFW, thank you both very much for being with us once again. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
Bob Gaylor, thank you for being with us once again. Thanks to our listeners and those who called in. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOY Fort Wayne. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. Fresh Air is next.